Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
You're listening to Round Table. I'm Lai Ming, joined by Neil Ho Ling and Brandon Yates in the studio. Coming up on today's show, April 23rd marks the World Book and Copyright Day, which is designated by the UNESCO to promote the enjoyment of books and reading. On this special occasion, we take a look at the growing interest in community libraries in Chinese cities. Meanwhile, the 2024 Beijing International Film Festival is underway in the Chinese capital. The final winners of the Tiantan Awards will be announced at the event, and diverse selection of domestic and international movies will be on exhibition in cinemas across the city. Today on Roundtable, we direct your attention to some of the highlights of the week-long festival. And in roughly 25 minutes from now, we will present the second episode of our English radio drama, Echoes of Kulian. We hope you enjoy a story of connection and friendship that has lasted beyond a century. Now on Roundtable, we celebrate the World Book and Copyright Day, and this is a day, as we said earlier, designated by the UNESCO as to celebrate and promote the enjoyment of books and reading, and this has been a tradition, or more like a norm, since the year 1995.
Mm. Every April 23rd, we celebrate the day, observe the day in different cities around the world. The date was actually chosen to honor the anniversary of the death of both William Shakespeare and Miguel de Cervantes, who both died on the day, 1616. The day is celebrated in over 100 countries around the world, aiming to promote the joys and reading and value of books. And
did they both die on the same day?
Yes.
In the same year?
Probably
yes.
Not.
Wow.
Are they on the same year? In the same year? Well, that's just...
I did not know that.
On the same day for sure. And people around the world actually have different activities celebrating mm-hmm. the day, especially in the day and age of digital media, mm-hmm. full on and more. Especially for people working in publishing industry, they feel the need to more and more encourage people to read, which is actually beneficial to each and every individual as well. And that is one of the reasons that on this occasion, UNESCO and the international organizations representing the three major sectors in the book industry, publishers, booksellers, and libraries, would select World Book Capital. That's a thing for this special day.
Right.
The initiative actually started in 2001, with Madrid being the first city to be honored. Each city selected as World Book Capital commits to promoting books, reading, and the publishing sector, and to organizing activities over the course of the year.
Well, this year, the capital is Strasbourg in Germany, and China is yet to have one on the list of World Book Capital.
Yes.
And the campaign starts today. We're going to
sure,
be next.
We're going to be next. And
absolutely.
For those of you who are interested in trying to make your city a book capital of the world, what you can do is actually try to prepare the information for an application, to go through the application process, and you have to propose the plans to promote books and literacy. And these programs should include public and private partnerships, involve various cultural events like book fairs, author readings, workshops and initiatives that encourage reading among all age groups, especially targeting those who have limited access to books.
And plenty of that is ongoing currently in the build-up to World Book Day. I know there's hundreds of events taking place across China, which is great to see. Yeah.
Which is why I think we should definitely prepare the information and material to apply, because we are already doing many of those things. For example, in Shandong, that's the province, actually on April 20th, the 14th City of Books was launched at the Jinan City Library in Shandong Province, with elementary school students participating in book exchange event. In Chongqing, for example, you see kids and teachers are reading both paper books and also through tablets and different types of digital facilities. And also in Nanchang, there are reading activities, reading for an hour campaign, and it's reported that over 3,000 readers participated in the event that day, and more than 4,500 copies of the initiatives were distributed to a lot of different people.
Hopefully, all of these reading campaigns are helping with making the kids put down those cigarette cards that we were talking about last week and picking up books instead.
I'm sure they're doing that at least for that day.
Yes.
In fact, beyond the specific date, there are also campaigns being launched across the country to promote reading. I think specifically in the city of Beijing, over the past few years, we've seen the effort in building and expanding expanding the access to books. Mm. In my residential community, there are these vending machines where you can scan a code and buy certain books. Even over the weekend, I went to a football court, you know, a football field, and right beside the field, there was this vending machine that I described earlier, where you can just scan a code and buy books. So Beijing really means it.
I love the idea of, you know, a football player at halftime going to a vending machine and instead of getting an energy drink, picking up a book.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe after a match, you feel like you want to enjoy some peaceful and quiet leisure time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, this year in 2024 in Beijing, various public libraries have held is going to held around 700 public reading events, and you get to see the variety of these different events. Some of the events would encourage people to attend certain speech made by masters. Some of them would invite them to go on a tour to different places and promote books with the theme of that tour. So different activities encouraging people to maybe get exposed to different types of books that they didn't realize that they're into.
And even on university campuses, I think we've discussed it before, or I've seen it in the news recently, where a couple of university campuses are having these reading events where they're encouraging students to read books and then to come forward into certain classes or events and share with the crowd their experiences of reading and what it meant to them. So it's creating this kind of system where people are able to share their personal experiences that they gained from reading certain books. And I think that's something that a lot of prospective readers need to hear, is that, yes, reading is, I suppose it takes more effort than just watching a movie or watching a TV series or something like that, but it often creates a personal experience that you may not have had without it. And I think people sharing those experiences will also encourage others to take up reading that may not have done so prior to hearing that information.
Of course, there are these and more occasions that we've developed and designed to promote reading. And in fact, we are looking forward to some more data on the reading habits of the Chinese people. I mean, I think later today we'll have more results coming from the event that's being held exactly today. And when it comes to reading, despite the lack of the most recent data, we can in our daily life observe some changes that we personally experience when it comes to reading. I think the number one issue is today the Chinese people are no longer clinging only to the paper books when they read, and digital reading has been a good thing, even though Amazon seems to have lost a battle to domestic brands when it comes to the market for digital readers, electronic readers. Still, that's pretty much a huge market. More Chinese brands are really rising to popularity. Meanwhile, I think with people's time being more and more devoted to video streaming platforms, reading has found a way to, you know, sneak into these markets as well. On websites like Bilibili, or I think mostly Bilibili.
Yeah.
More often than not, I can come across a video that is actually the reading of a book. And sometimes with AI technology assisting the production of the video, you can hear the audio book at the same time get an animated version of the book. I mean, that certainly enhances the reading experience.
I've kind of noticed this trend on subways as well. I mean, you do get a lot of people that are looking at their phones, obviously just waiting to get off at the next stop or whatever it may be. And I would say it's equal in terms of the amount of people that are watching either short videos on a streaming app. But again, half the amount of people are also looking at their phones reading. And I would normally assume that they were reading news headlines or whatever it may be. But when I actually observed what people were doing and scrolling very slowly, I realized that they are actually reading, which I think is a great trend and also a great way to make time pass by on the subway.
Yes, and Lai Ming mentioned artificial intelligence helping people get information or helping people read or select the books they want to read. Actually, there are so many different tools, and I think that has also become a trend for people's life. That is, instead of picking a paper book and start reading and taking notes and finish reading, what people do now, they have a lot more choices nowadays. For example, you mentioned the read aloud tools that allows people to convert text to speech, making books accessible to those who are visually busy or even visually impaired.
Sure,
yeah. And we've also got different language translation and comprehension tools, changing or translating books or assist non-native speakers to understand the kind of books that they want to read, but they do not understand the language.
Mm. Making translators obsolete.
Well, not exactly.
because
I feel like sometimes when you're reading, if you're reading for pleasure, if you want to get the beauty of the language, of the wording, then you need a good translator.
Yeah,
but
sure.
If you're only trying to abstract or trying to find out the exact piece of information, then a translating machine might be good enough. And in the meantime, we've also got AI tools generate concise summaries of books, allowing readers to quickly grasp the main points.
Or cheat on their homework.
That happens as well. And there are even better ways to cheat. That is, we've got AI-powered interactive reading assistants that can answer questions about the text you provide them. So you give them
I wish I was a kid now back in high school. Life would have been so much easier.
Or you can be a better kind of kid, that is to use the AI-powered study aids, which means you can give the AI tools the kind of book you want to read, the PDF file, and then the AI tool can actually generate study sets for the book content.
That's
they
incredible.
Can generate flashcards. They can even create personalized study plans based on the content of a book.
Amazing.
So there are so many different tools out there. All you need to do is to have the inspiration, to have the courage, and also have the patience to actually start reading.
Well, AI certainly has helped make reading more efficient, but I think sometimes reading is, efficiency, the word is overrated in the sense that not every brain is fine-tuned to accept, to withstand efficiency. Sometimes our brain takes a little time to digest and understand and comprehend a certain meaning being conveyed in books. And so I would suggest that, of course, these AI technologies are very helpful, but reading is a process in and of itself. It's a process that trains your mind, that adapts your mind to whatever information that's going about around you. And if you find that artificial intelligence not helping you getting the necessary information, not training your brain enough, then perhaps slowing things down a bit is the smart way to do it.
I guess it depends on your goals. So if you're reading for leisure, I would definitely recommend what you were just suggesting now. But with regards to studying, it sounds like, especially if you have so much to study, and I think a lot of high school and university students are sometimes inundated with the amount of work that they have to do. It sounds like some of these AI tools can really...
Flashcards!
Yeah, can really help them focus and fine-tune their studying, which I think is fantastic.
Right. And reading really has changed a lot over the past few years. And another thing that we observed on Roundtable is the popularity of community libraries. I mean, these libraries have been built, and we've been talking about it for the past few years, and they really have been built since about 10 years ago, and the number really abound in big cities like Beijing. But all of a sudden, particularly this year, there are more talks about community libraries. Why is that? Why is it that something that was built probably 10 years ago suddenly becomes more popular these days?
I think it's because they are being rediscovered as a great place to spend your leisure time. Mm. Because we had the conversation about being an introvert versus an extrovert, and a lot of young people identify them as an introvert. They do not want a super busy place where they can chat out loud with their friends. What they actually need is a quiet place with hot water, with air conditioner, with Wi-Fi, perhaps, to spend some quiet and concentrated time. And they discovered that these community libraries are a good place to do that. These places can not only provide them with a comfortable environment to either read or to study their own stuff. But in the meantime, more importantly, it can give them the sense that they are getting the grasp of their routine of life. Again, that is, they spend certain amount of time every day or every week in the library, making it a habit of their daily life. And that makes them feel like they've got this anchor or this kind of pillar spiritually or mentally that they need in their life.
The key word is convenience or accessibility.
Sure.
Because community libraries by its name means that it's an institution located within your residential community or within a walking distance of that residential community. As such, is some people are saying that they don't need to get changed, they don't need to put on makeup, all they need to do
yes.
is just walk. Close the door and just walk to the community library, and maybe they're immediately be immersed in a reading mood, and that seems to be the advantage that community libraries are presenting to those who really want to read.
And thanks.
In the meantime, I think the system that comes with the community library has somehow improved. We all know the National Library of China or the Municipal Library of Beijing. I mean, but these are, you know, high-level libraries, certain rules might have to be imposed on those who visit. But then when it comes to community libraries, perhaps you can afford to be a little casual. Perhaps you can afford to not wear makeup and show up. Perhaps you can afford to bring your own books and try to do your own homework within the premise. And also the system allows readers to borrow books and return it in a different location. Perhaps a book that you've borrowed from the Municipal Library of Beijing, you can return them at the community library. This obviously involves a lot of investment in terms of resources, but it certainly is making life much easier for those who do want to read and who do want to make use of these community libraries.
And this is the moment when I want to extend my gratitude to the city planners who invented the idea of a 15-minute reading circle. That is, within 15 minutes, you get to go to a community library and enjoy your leisure time.
You're listening to Roundtable. Coming up, highlights of the ongoing Beijing International Film Festival.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
Enlightened by films, united as one. That's the main theme of the 14th Beijing International Film Festival that's currently going on in the Chinese capital. It's an occasion when movie industry insiders and scholars and even moviegoers get together to enjoy and celebrate the art of the filmmaking and the art of, you know, producing them and appreciating and making use of light and telling stories.
Definitely. Actually, the Beijing International Film Festival is held from April 18th to the 26th this month. And the crown jewel of the events definitely would be the Tiantan Award. It is the official competition section of the Beijing International Film Festival. Each year, it comprises a maximum of 17 full-length feature films. During the festival, a 7-member jury committee will watch the shortlisted films and select the films and filmmakers to be awarded in 10 categories. So that is going to be a feast for moviegoers. And in the meantime, as many other film festivals out there, it is already a celebration and a carnival. Actually, carnival is one of the key words of the event for people, that they can spend some time in the town of films. They can attend different movie screenings, both online and offline. And there are even events such as night fairs, such as on-site real-life music performances, as well as...
And boxing matches, apparently.
Boxing matches as well, and esports competitions to attend and to watch. So many different fun going on currently.
Mm. I mean, the competition obviously is important for movie industry professionals and insiders. I mean, this is an occasion where they have an opportunity to showcase their own product and make friends and communicate and get valuable exchanges. But on the other hand, the film festival also is an occasion for the average moviegoers or even the average residents in the city to have an opportunity to see movies that otherwise isn't immediately available in the piandan or the in the movie
films.
schedule, the market oriented movie schedule. So we have a number of movies, in fact, more than 240 outstanding Chinese and foreign films, and that will be screened from April 18th to 27th at 27 partner cinemas and venues. I mean, I used to cover Beijing International Film Festival, and one of the things that really got me hooked up is the chance of watching movies that aren't exactly available otherwise in commercial movie cinemas. So every year around this time, people are really getting excited about whether they can get a ticket to see this. Could be a historical movie, could be a classic movie, could be something that's from a nation that's not particularly well known in terms of the movie landscape. Still, they get a chance to be viewed, to be aired on these occasions.
Well, actually, not only that, there are different themed or sub-selection of different movies as well. For example, we see restored classics using cutting-edge technologies to help bring classics back to the screen and making them 4K films. Mm. And there are themes featuring women's voices. They will screen impressive female-themed films. And also animation is another sub-theme.
And that's becoming increasingly popular.
Yes, definitely.
Films, yeah.
Yes. And also a new section or new subsection this year is live theater. This subsection will present a rich variety of recordings of live Chinese and foreign stage plays and performances in cinema so as to explore the diverse future of cinema. And of course, there is a special subsection featuring French movies this year, because this year marks the 60th anniversary of the establishment of China-France diplomatic ties. So classics and latest French films that span around six decades include Band of Outsiders, La Vie en Rose. These movies a classic, would also attract, I would assume, a lot of viewers.
And I think among the discussions, AI's influence on films is also one of the trending topics amongst, industry insiders from all across the world. So it'll be interesting to see, from my perspective, what influence AI will have on films going forward into the future. I think that'll be a very interesting trend to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that you also shed light on the other eye-catching event that people can sign up for during these international film festivals. And that is, there are seminars and discussions that is open to those who've bought a ticket. I mean, discussions about documentaries, or maybe this year, like Brendan said earlier, discussion about how artificial intelligence technology is going to affect the movie industry and how these professionals are going to deal with the onslaught of this technology certainly is quite interesting. I actually had a chance to talk to a lot of movie professionals on these occasions. So if you are a media professional or if you're a avid movie fan, then these are the occasions that you must seize upon to get that exposure. And there are plenty of movies that we just mentioned earlier and that's being promoted at the festival. Anything that stands out for you?
Yeah, I'm quite interested about this film called Not a Word that is directed by Hannah Slack, and it seems to involve a variety of topics. It involves conversations, the relationship between a mother and her son. There's a criminal aspect to it. It also involves relations between students at school. So I think it covers a variety of topics that could really interest a large audience. So I think that's something to keep an eye on.
You can definitely buy a ticket
and
the film festival and go check it out. As for me, I picked a movie called I Love You, To the Moon and Back. I would assume...
Sounds like a children's story.
No, it's a very lovely story about this newlyweds couple who work in different cities and they meet once a month traveling on a slow train. And because they've both got a special day off and they decided to surprise each other on each other's cities.
Travel to the moon and back.
they keep on missing each other on the train to the opposite directions, the opposite cities. I think it'll be a cool and fun and sweet movie to watch.
Maybe a reason for couples to be angry about. Why didn't you talk to me before buying the train tickets? What a waste of money.
The element of surprises.